Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's rapidly changing world. Your host is Dane Gruneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. Today, Dane is joined by Kevin Torf. Kevin is a seasoned information systems executive with over 40 years of experience specializing in large-scale IT strategic plans, project design, procurement, and implementation. As the co-founder and managing partner of T2 Group, he introduced the company's hybrid agile methodology and serves as the chief strategist and advisor for leading enterprise systems in the United States. In this episode, Kevin and Dane unpack the realities of leading teams through complexity, where success depends less on perfection and more on momentum, adaptability, and shared responsibility. Drawing from Kevin's projects framework, they explore how simplicity in planning and structure helps team navigate uncertainty, rebalance workloads, and keep moving, even when challenges arise. Along the way, they discuss the value of reflection, the importance of empowering others, and how the best teams don't avoid mistakes. They absorb them, learn, and evolve. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name is Dane Gruneveld, CEO of the Huddle 3 Group. And today I'm joined by Kevin Torf. Kevin is the managing partner at T2 Tech Group, the author of Getting the Job Done. And most importantly, he is a fellow rugby fan of South African origin. So he's been rubbing it in before the show about how much better they are than the Australians right now. Welcome, Kevin.
Well, Dane, thanks for inviting me and thanks for being part of your show. Looking forward to talking about our rugby teams and telling you how wonderful South Africa is.
No, I love it. I love it. I've only ever had good experiences with South Africa and South African rugby. But more importantly, you know, tell us about you. How did you come to be doing all of this work around technology and people and projects? And, you know, what led you to be bringing the book together, you know, Get the Job Done?
Well, it started back with my father. I was fortunate enough to learn from him the fundamentals and basics of electronics. And, you know, back in an earlier life of mine when the computers were still evolving, that was very valuable and started a little bit of coding and, you know, tinkering around back in my, you know, teens. And being in South Africa, got a job in that field and worked for an electronics company and got into the first commercialization of computers and technology, and loved it, and decided to come to the US because of an opportunity that presented itself for really no other reason. And I've been here some 30 years and I've been very much in the same field. Mm-hmm. Just doing things in technology and working in different areas. And then about the last 15 or so years, started focusing mostly on healthcare. And in a lot of my different efforts, realized that it's actually not sometimes what you know or how skilled you are. It's how to get the job done. Yeah. And really started focusing more around governance and process. Of, you know, what is the most efficient and effective way of accomplishing what you set out to, and started practicing that, built a great business around that, and worked on some really exciting large-scale projects, and decided that I wanted to put some of my thoughts down and try to find different ways to express my ideas and some of the strategies we've used over the years, and got a book out of it, and it's called Getting the Job Done, which is everything I believe in.
That's brilliant. You and I were talking pre-show that naturally I'm biased, but people coming from countries like ours, South Africa, Australia, Canada, you know, have kind of grown up with a culture of kind of pragmatism and getting things done at the frontiers. I think that actually shows out in a lot of teams that I've had the pleasure of working with or alongside. What is it that you you know, saw in your early career or that you've seen through the teams that you've worked on that kind of created that influence around like efficient and effective project outcomes?
You know, with hindsight, you can go back and look at anything. I'm going to say it was more maybe just the fact I was very simple in my ways, in my upbringing. And we didn't have, we had more than most, but definitely nothing significant. And we always had to make do. And my father taught me great values. And to appreciate the few things that we did have. And when, you know, we needed to do something that you only measured by what you accomplish. And, and you know, I wasn't going to buy my way through any of this. So I had to start, you know, just working and being effective. And that really just came, it wasn't really intentional or through a plan I had, but it's by practicing it and be, you know, you start learning to be effective and then you do actually appreciate it when you look back.
Oh, big time. It makes me think back to, weirdly enough, camping trips, growing up, because what you talk about there is like simple in the ways and maybe making do with what you've got. And often you go on a camping trip and you're like, well, someone's bringing this and someone else is bringing that. And that person has a truck that can haul a boat. And you kind of all get up there and you start working out what you can trade or who's going to be responsible for putting the cooking tent together or who's going to, you know, go and set up the beach camp for the day. And you just see this very, like, to your point, it's like, let's make the best of what we've got. There's constraints. We're only here for a long weekend. We've only got what we bought. And it's amazing how you can create energy and a great experience just by not having the ability to run down the road to the store or to go to the cinemas. Like you're out there, you got what you got.
Yeah. There was a show, I'm dating myself now, it was like called MacGyver. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
That show, but you know, he just had the ability to like take anything and do something with it.
Yeah.
And you know, and it's great. And yeah, I loved it because it is true. And there are so many things you can do if you allow yourself to develop and think like that.
Yeah.
You know, some of my best games and, you know, we used to play, I had a mentor that used to say to me, you know, like if you got a wire hanger, you know, in 3 minutes, tell me all the things you could do with it.
Wow. Yeah.
And, you know, you think like a wire hanger, hang clothes. Okay. No, I can use it to tie something up. I can use it as an antenna. I can use it as an electrical conductor.
Yeah.
And you just start going and going and going, and you'll be amazed of how many things you can do with a wire hanger. I can use it to open a car vehicle if I lock my keys in it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just love that way of thinking, and that's evolved in how I do things.
Oh, I love that. When you talk about efficient and effective, Kevin, like what does that look like? You talk about extraordinary project outcomes, but if you really wanted to go in and survey a team after a project and say what gave you a sense that it was efficient and effective, are there telltale signs? Are there key metrics? What do you look for?
You know, they are. And, you know, the probably the best way to look at it is if you look at sport. And you look at a rugby team like we discussed, or you look at a football team, you know, any team sport where you see people working well together. And what does working well mean? It means, it really means people knowing each other's responsibility, people being able to communicate with each other.
Yeah.
And you'll see that in the results, you know, of good play. And effectively, I mean, in rugby, moving the ball around and being in the right place at the right time doesn't, you know, this is about working together. People don't realize how much goes into that training and understanding of each other and learning how to collaborate. And, you know, whether you're on the field or you're in an office or you know, wherever you are, it's the same game. So, yes, when after the fact, to answer your question, when you see that engagement and you see people understanding their weaknesses, their strengths, knowing who's responsible for what, usually that brings about efficiency.
Yeah, I like the word engagement too, Kevin, because as you talked about knowing responsibility, being able to communicate, I started to hear things like really cool plays when you're running great plays because everyone knows their role, that they're telling each other where to be. And then another word that comes up is like adaptability. Because to your point, like if the team's engaged and if they're communicating and they know their roles, when that unforeseen problem shows up, which is going to show up no matter how big or small your project is, the team can kind of adapt and move with it in real time. They don't have to wait until, you know, halftime to go into the change rooms and get shouted at by the coach, right?
Yeah, no, it's it's in the framework of what I've built the program that's been success for us. It's very agile. I've taken stuff from agile and the word agile scrum, which is a software development methodology.
Yeah.
I don't practice it in its total form like a software development company does, but because we apply to any project, it's not relevant what we're doing. So it's a hybrid of it. But you know, the purpose of Agile was to be able to pivot, to be able to adapt. So if you want to be able to do that, you need to learn how to reflect, and that means you need to constantly evaluate what you're doing, so you know what's working and what's not working, and apply yourself, because you know you come across situations all the time, like you said, the unforeseen.
Yeah.
You know, so what are you going to do? You know, well, do something, but really try and get a good understanding if you can, and reflect to see is it working, and if it is, continue, and if not, well, change, pivot.
Yeah. I'm excited to kind of dive more into your framework here in a minute, but I think that concept of pivoting in teams is never more important than it is now. Like you said, not just in IT, but you know, there's so much work that we're all doing, and it's not always effective and efficient. In fact, sometimes it's highly disengaging the way that we have to do our work. So actually giving teams that opportunity to have a language or a framework or an accountability system for saying, here's some tension, here's some confusion, let's move past it in a different way is very liberating. And hopefully it drives some of that efficiency and effectiveness.
Well, as your listeners must probably very well know, it's, the world's just changing at such a fast rate now. It's the rate of change that, from when I was a child and still am now, when I was back many years ago. Yeah. The things, I don't know if it's just the mindset or it's just the psychic, but things didn't seem to happen so quickly. They seem to happen much faster right now. So, I think there's truth to it, because we got instantaneous information that we never used to have.
Yes.
So we couldn't see even what was going on. It might have been going on as quick, but nobody was aware of it because we didn't get to hear it all the time.
Yeah.
Now you just get to hear it constantly.
which is interesting. I had this conversation with a guest last week that, you know, has the information actually become a burden, the accessibility? Because going back to your earlier point on like, let's make it simple, let's work with what we have. Now we have so much information, you can just get paralyzed in, you know, assessing different ways to go and different opinions and different tools to use. Like how do you see that showing up?
Sometimes more options is not ideal. We think it is. Give me all my options. You go to a restaurant, you look at the menu, and you got 100 items on the menu, and again, and now you start questioning yourself. You start thinking, well, do I want that? Don't I want that? What do I feel like? Whereas if you had a little less, you'd be able to make that decision probably a little quicker and be as satisfied. So do you get that much benefit from it? I think there's a balance.
But
I look at it like that. Sometimes too many options can be not as effective as you ultimately would want it to be.
Yeah. I remember a book called Dedicated, and they talked about infinite browsing mode. And they're like, when you go to sit down in front of Netflix and you spend more time looking at the options you've got than actually watching the show. and I can see a few teams in that mode at work. Do you have, as part of your framework perhaps, or otherwise, do you have any kind of approach or methodology for how you can kind of run quick decisions or quick experiments when there are lots of options available to a team?
Well, yeah, I didn't invent this, but it is a style of my way of the way I do things. But Agile talks for, just get started, get going, and have a very short cadence and build a cycle around that. So get started, reflect on what you're doing, tweak it, move on, and just build a very regular cadence and do this in short iterations, and eventually you will evolve, you will adapt, you'll also mature, you'll also learn. Yeah. And you got to trust a little bit, because you got to believe in that you're going to ultimately get there. And it doesn't exclude having a vision or really having a bigger goal and objective. Yep. But sometimes, like we said, with those options, when you fixate too much on those goals and those objectives, you lose sight of what you actually need to do to get going. Yeah. So, get started and just start rolling with it. My favorite is, if I drop you in the middle of the ocean, which direction will you swim? And I ask a lot of people that question, because I'm curious in how they answer. There's no right or wrong answer.
No.
But it's interesting how some people will say, well, tell me more. Which way is the wind blowing? Where's the current? Can I see land? And I think all of those questions, myself personally, I'm not many people think they're valuable, but I think they're relevant, because I better start swimming. If I don't swim, I'm going to drown. And it's irrelevant the direction I'm swimming, because once I start, I'll start learning and I'll start seeing maybe what's the better way to go. Yeah. And hopefully I'll get to where I ultimately want to go to, it's safety or whatever it might be. But you've got to believe in yourself. You've got to be confident enough to at least just get out there and try.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I'd never even thought about it like that. It's that if you don't swim, don't overthink it. If you don't swim, you're going to sink. And you're certainly not going to be any closer to anything.
You can't believe how many people I've had analyze it. Well, but you know what? You can lie on your back and you can, you can wait and you can see what's going on. And all of those things are all true. They're all possible. And people do all of those different things.
Yeah.
But my style and what's allowed me to do the things I do today is just start. Get going.
Yeah, I like that. It's a great call to action. And there's something very human about motion and movement. The more I look at it, it's difficult when you've got a team that's just stuck focusing on a problem. When you've got a team that's just out doing things, to your point earlier on sort of that agile methodology, they're bringing back observations from the field. Or ideas that pop up when they're out trying something else and they run into a new problem. So I like the motion. I like the activity.
No, it's like anything. It's momentum can be wonderful in so many different ways. It brings that camaraderie together. It brings passion. It happens in sport teams. It happens in life. Even a salesman, their best sale is the sale after they just made one,
Yeah.
It brings a level of confidence you can't even quantify it, because it's not like a switch. It just happens.
Yeah.
And you've got to allow that momentum to roll.
And inspiration's a word that comes to mind there as well. Like you mentioned the salesperson who, makes a sale and goes on and does another. When I used to play cricket, we always used to say one wicket brings two. Like you just got to create something, a spark. And sometimes seeking inspiration outside of the core body of work is huge. Maybe it is taking a walk and listening to a podcast. Maybe it is getting on a customer site and asking some questions around problems they're having, or going and talking to a vendor or going to a conference. But sometimes it's surprising where that spark comes from.
No, definitely. I'd be remiss to say you had to bring up cricket. You see now, I thought we were doing so well and we were like, we're really having an engaging conversation. And then you had to bring up cricket again. Listen, we know where we both stand.
Yeah, that's right. I had to even the balance there. Oh, that's good. So with that, let's jump into a little bit more of your framework. So it's the projects framework, correct, Kevin?
Yes. And it didn't start like that. I mean, it makes sense now when you think about it. We talk about evolve, you know, the word project. Well, that's what you do. You do projects, Kev. I didn't actually even think of it like that. I really didn't. When I started putting my thoughts on paper, I'm not a talented writer. So it was a struggle for me to really start, you know, articulating the types of things that I was doing. And I started trying to write a story first, and then I thought, you know, I'm not an academic in that way. Let me just build a book on tips. So yeah. I thought, you know, I was like, start with the children's book first. You know, do the pictures.
Yeah,
you know, come up with a simple one pager that really just talks about a tip, and try build many of these. And I started, building out quite a few, and before I knew it, I had about 20 or 30 different tips in different ways, working with teams, empowering people, you know, how to create organizational structures. And I thought, well, how am I going to group these to actually make it meaningful for someone to read? So it's not just one of those bathroom entertainment books that would keep you occupied.
Yeah.
And I used the word projects because really most of it was around building on projects. And then I started putting them into the different letters and created an acronym, you know, P for planning, R for reflection, O for organization, J for juggling, E for empowerment, C for communications, T for teamwork, and S for standards. And I said, which one of my tips would fall into each one of those groups? And, you know, planning, we all plan. And, you know, what is my definition of planning is don't overplan, don't underplan. You've got to find that balance. So, you know, if you read a lot of the tips, they themed around that approach where reflection is about, if you're not going to plan a lot, you're more than likely going to make mistakes. So you better reflect. If you don't reflect, you're going to go down the wrong road and you're going to be swimming in the wrong direction for a long, long time.
Yeah.
You know, so reflect. Stop every 10 minutes. Stop every week. You know, find your cadence and then, you know, talk about, is this the right approach? Is this the right way? And each one of these letters goes on and defines that in a way that I try to keep things as simple as I can.
Yeah. I love it. It makes it easy to remember. A big question is like, is it in order? Do you need to do your planning before you do your reflection and then you do your organization? Or is it more of like a large Venn diagram where you're doing a bit of everything all at once?
You are, unfortunately, the word projects, I couldn't change the way that the English language, you know, have put it in its order and spelled the word out. No, for most part, there's elements of it, but, the P happens to be the one where you start, you plan, you know, but then, you know, I would say maybe, create a little bit of an organization. So define your rules.
Yeah.
You know, everything in life needs rules. Get a team. I'll put that one next probably.
Yeah.
Find out who you're going to be working with. Empower that team. Give them the ability to be successful.
Yeah.
And, you know, then allow the team to start. And, you know, it's very probable they're going to do a lot of juggling. So we want to try to reduce that amount of juggling because that we need to get them focused. So we do that through reflection. And, you know, we can only reflect if we can communicate well.
Yeah.
So we've got to learn how to start talking to each other and respecting each other and messaging each other. And eventually, you know, we'll build standards around that, which will allow it to scale.
Yes.
So you can be repetitive in how you do things. So, yeah, maybe I'd mix those words around a little bit. But
that's kind of neat because it kind of says like it's not cascaded or waterfalled. It's like all of these things are always happening and that they enforce and reinforce and inform the others. Like you may adjust standards based on some reflection.
Very much so. Yeah, no, and that's the, you know, the whole holy grail of agile. It's about being agile. It's being able to adapt to the different situations.
Yeah. So when you think about that, let's say you get, let's dive into planning. How do you balance over and under planning? Like, are there particular exercises you use, tools you use, questions you ask? I'm fascinated by that, Kevin.
Yeah, so the odd tools I do have, you know, I've got my project management tools and Microsoft Project, one of the more famous ones of a waterfall Gantt chart, structured, sequential way of thinking. And I still use it today because sometimes you need that. You need to set milestones. And life, you know, unfortunately, you know, if you follow the manifesto of Agile, it says, you know, just worry about what you got to do today. Don't worry about tomorrow. It's going to happen. It's going to come. Well, that's unfortunately not realistic in life because we have limited money and we have limited time. So time and money define what you can and when you can get things done by. So that's a reality, unless I'm in this beautiful research lab and I've been told just to make it happen. Endless. Yeah. But that's just not practical. So, you know, that's not agile, you know, predefining your time. You know, you're meant to ask your engineers or the people you work with how long something takes to get done. Yeah. Not, I want this done by this date. That's a very, very, you know, opposite reaction. But that's just not practical. It's, we always got a time limit. We always got to do things within a framework. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, as we establish that, you want to plan just enough to get started. I would even say plan the least amount you possibly can to get started. But you need a plan because you don't want to go in there with nothing. So it's you know, and you got to train yourself to do that. It doesn't happen automatically. You won't get it right. You know, there's not my theory, Tuckman's theory. You know, he's got some great books he wrote about, you know, you start forming your thoughts and, you know, and yeah, you know, you think you're productive and you think you're doing well, and then you start storming. Which is actually a very unproductive time because you're all over the place because you're now not, you're not confident in what you're doing. You don't have a structure yet. And then eventually you'll start norming and you will start normalizing your approach because you'll now become a little bit more accustomed, a little more trained. Yeah. And eventually you'll start performing. It's like an athlete as well.
Yeah.
You know, when you bring that first team together at the beginning of a season, you see chaos. All four of those elements, and by the end of the season, hopefully they're performing.
Yeah. One thing I always loved as a kid in sports was like grading at the beginning of the season. You'd bring everyone in and you'd be like, okay, let's all just get out there and play, and then we'll work out who fits well together and who's leveled on which team. And I just don't feel like we do enough of that in business. Like, we don't sit there and go, let's go and run an exercise, a simulation, a small project to see who's going to play well with each other and who we should pick to go and do this piece of work. Often we just kind of go, oh, Jenny's the best performer and this is a project right up her street, so let's just give it to her and let her go and pick her team. And sometimes we end up overloading our best people and we're not really thinking about all of those human dynamics.
Oh, I think very much it happens all the time. I think it's also another part of that is that it's not even a matter of choosing the right players. We just don't have a choice. So and so
is all we've got.
You know, you go forward now. You know, this is what I've got to work with. And again, that's the reality of life. And then you'll find, oh well, you know, but all these people, they need some direction. And then it goes back to your previous example. Yeah. Well, you know, so and so, Samantha's got the talent, so let's have her do this. Well, but she's doing 10 other things. Yeah, but she's the only one that knows how to do it. So we get Samantha, now she's overloaded. The rest of the team, we didn't have a choice from. We just put them in play. And now we say, okay, go out and be successful and go and get the job done. And well, it's not going to happen immediately. They're going to have to learn how to work with each other and adapt.
It's really interesting. I've been reading a lot on, going back to your earlier point, on sort of engagement energy levels in teams. And one of the biggest energy drainers right now in teams is when there's a bottleneck in the organization, when the team's so reliant on a leader who has the authority or the knowledge or the resources that the team needs to get stuff done, and they just they keep running into these kind of walls. You know, when you go about your projects in this way, how do you kind of identify some of those obstacles and kind of knock them out? Is that part of the reflection process?
It is. Yeah, it's also part of the juggling process and the empowerment. So juggling generally is not very effective. You know, people think, oh, I can do multiple things at once. Yes, you can. And yes, we do. And yes, we have to in many, many times. But you, if you did one thing, you probably would do it a lot better. Yeah. And I think if you have, if you got that mindset, if I could only do one thing, I'd be great at it. But if I did 10 things, I might only be good at it. It's yeah. not the same. You're diluting your value. So, you know, what do you do when you have a really strong person and they juggle in a lot of things around? It's not effective. You've got to allow someone else to take some of those responsibilities. Well, we don't trust people enough to want to do that. So we don't usually empower people to go make those mistakes and be successful. So I think it's actually usually the smartest person on the block or that leader that we just spoke of that knows everything. They're doing a disservice by trying to do everything themselves.
Yeah.
In order for them to be a team player, they need to, you know, let other people make mistakes because that's how they learned. And it's the only way other people are going to learn is if they can try something, learn how to do it, and then be good at it. And then they will be good, just as good as you. But you got to let go. And it's hard. But it's the only way to grow.
It's a great soundbite. I'm going to replay that as well. You said, allow them to make the mistakes to be successful. And that's just like so contrary to what so many of us as leaders think our job is.
Yeah, no, and it's fun, and if you do it in the framework that I'm proposing or that I practice, not proposing, everyone needs to choose their own. If I'm reflecting enough, the mistake won't be as significant because I'll see it within a few days, I'll see it within a week, and I'll realize, okay, that's not working. Let's adapt. So the damage isn't that significant. And in the framework of a large-scale project, it's actually minimal.
Yeah.
And, you know, it will resolve itself because you will mature as you learn to work together. And everyone then will find their place.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. And I think the that concept of regularly making time to reflect is something that actually isn't hard to create. We just don't make time for it in teams. But if you did say, hey, we're going to have a reflection moment, and you can, I would imagine you can craft them in different ways. Maybe one's a virtual team meeting, maybe one's a job site walk down, maybe one's a customer engagement. But I would imagine you could just program these little short bursts to actually encourage more reflection in a team setting.
No, very much so. I do believe in reflection all the time. But, you know, in these formalized projects, we do it, you know, at a set cadence. You know, every week, look back at what you did the past week, try and adjust. But if you just learn to reflect all the time and don't think of it as being super critical or trying to find faults, because sometimes people take it the wrong way. You know, they're not transparent enough in their mannerism and in who they are that they don't want to expose themselves to really, you know, talk about some of those weaknesses as we learn. And it's unfortunate because it doesn't make you less. It actually makes you stronger. To be able to adapt. So these all counterintuitive logic, but they work. They do if you just allow yourself to be a little more vulnerable and just a little bit more transparent. I call it running around naked. Just accept the fact that what you have and what you can, and you'll get there and you'll build that confidence as you evolve.
And I guess if you're doing that well, particularly as a leader, if you make it a habit to share mistakes, almost to celebrate mistakes and say, hey, cool, we found that early, we acted on it, it didn't drag on for 6 months and you know, sink us later. Leaders got a big role to play there.
Definitely. It is all about that leadership. It's and it's that coach, that mentor, to drive that team to evolve. And yeah, and the leader also, you know, in many cases is part of the team. They need to be a team member. They need to work, and they shouldn't have different rules, and they shouldn't be governed in a different way. It's one team. You should all be treated equally.
Yeah, it's interesting that it brings to the front of my mind a quote that I heard on a podcast recently, which is that he said, success is the worst kind of failure. And I kind of paused on that for a minute. I'm like, what does he mean by success is the worst kind of failure? But it doesn't create a lot of feedback that failure can. And so you might fall ass backwards into, you know, delivering a project on time and budget and to quality, but never actually know what it was that allowed you to achieve that. And you go into the next one and, you know, you've got a whole lot of assumptions that aren't real.
Oh, no, it's unfortunate. And it's actually, I grew up with a contradiction to that. And it's actually a struggle of how I've tried to balance the two, because my father always taught me, if everyone says it's okay to make a mistake, but you know what? I want to work with people that don't make the mistake to begin with.
Yeah.
So I learned that in a hard way, because it was about, well, how to be perfect all the time.
Yeah.
But it's just not practical, and it's just not, it doesn't happen. And you're right, you learn more from your mistakes. So it's how to find that balance.
Yeah. There's a learning and a growth that comes with that, isn't there? Because if you can't make a mistake, or if you're not making mistakes, then this tightness and this trust kind of problem kind of squeezes. So it is really interesting. Like, is there a way potentially to plan for, you know, small constrained areas where mistakes are okay?
I think it's, you know, I think the first thing is sometimes not to think of it as a mistake.
Mm.
You think of it as there's a better way of doing something. So
yeah,
you do want to put that positive spin on it. And, you know, it's learning. I really have respected the Montessori system,
yes,
you know, the schooling of how she went about it and how she structured the classrooms. And there were many things that she did that I think really talk well to how to build teams. But one aspect was putting three age groups together in a one classroom.
Yeah.
So you can have different people, different individuals learn from each other.
Yeah.
The young learn from the old as mentors. The mentors learn from the young in order to teach. And that's very much like a team where you have a superstar on it, and you might have some other individuals that are not as experienced. And how do you get the experienced person to share their knowledge, but also for the experienced person to grow even more, and they can grow by teaching.
100%.
When you build that mechanics, you can get a better team out of it. And that's, you know, that's just one of Montessori's principles. And I think it's very valuable.
Yeah. It's interesting going back to that earlier point that you raised around just the pace of change. It almost calls upon leaders to do more of what you just explained, which is, you know, get into that Montessori kind of teamwork framework of leveling and getting closer to some of the real work, because otherwise very quickly you can become so removed from the work or the customer problem or the job site issue that you don't know how to engage with your teams. You don't even know what the right questions are to be asking.
No, you don't. Again, I'm going to use Montessori. My wife's a Montessori teacher, so I've got to give her a plug. They teach the teacher to sit on the floor with the kids when they're reading and things like that, but not at a desk, not behind a mantle. They want them to be part of the experience. And really all the teacher's job is really on the floor is to help direct the kids in what they do and how they're engaging with each other. So they really become one unit. And if a leader can achieve that, there is a tremendous success that comes from it. And it's definitely different from being that dictator and forcing things upon people. And we'll also get your results, but and some people are successful in doing it that way. But I think there's a lot more success, and it's a lot more enjoyable the other.
Yeah, I think you're right. I've definitely been alongside some big construction teams where the fist banging, head banging kind of mentality was what was required to get through the job, but it always came at a cost. So if you've got a team going project to project, it doesn't sustain.
Well, that's how I started. I mean, I thought to be a good project manager was how to be a good police officer and how to, enforce and insist and structure and no options and I want it done and you're gonna do it. And what I realized was that you didn't get it done. You didn't do it the way you could have done it. You set a date that was unrealistic and you rushed it and you met the date, but it maybe the product wasn't as great as it could have been. And there was always some shortcoming. But I was, fortunately, I was successful and I built a business around that approach. But I slowly realized it wasn't as sustainable as other ways of doing things. And as you work with other people, you need to learn how to embrace them.
Yeah, 100%. I also think that it talks to the fact, I love the way that you turn sort of, let's not talk about it as a mistake, but let's talk about it around finding a better way to do something. If as a leader, you are sitting down on the floor with the team or you're out checking customers in or whatever you're doing out in the field, so there are so many of those better ways to do things that just emerge from the fringes of your organization. They're not going to be visible from, the ivory tower or the center of innovation or whatever you've got in your organization. So I love that there's kind of a call to action and emotion around just being involved in activity to see where those better ways exist.
Oh, yeah, no, and it even goes further than that. Instead of trying to single a person out as a failure, don't look, ask the team how they could do better and make the team more accountable to each other and responsible for each other, because then the team will find the solution, not the individual. So, and even if an individual doesn't perform to the extent that you had hoped, make it a team problem, not the individual. Because when we go back, and I'm going back to our cricket and rugby, when South Africa beats Australia, that it wasn't about, you don't remember the one individual that failed, and there was individuals that failed.
All day long.
Someone missed a throw, done a lineup or whatever, but it was the team that failed, and history will show it as the score was, South Africa 21, Australia, sorry, I got to keep going on that road, 14. But and the if the team says, we as a whole are going to do better, you'll start looking for the individuals that could be doing better, and you'll help them and you evolve them and they will get better.
100%. And what I like about that too is when you focus on who's getting better and how they're doing it, it pulls everyone forward rather than going doing that policing that you touched on earlier.
And the difference between a sport team and business is, a sport team will say, well, I'm getting rid of this player, I'm going to bring on a new player. Well, if business does that, doesn't businesses don't have that opportunity. They got to allow everybody to succeed. I mean, I'm not saying you can't get rid of people, but it's a lot more complicated
and expensive.
You need to evolve. Absolutely.
Yeah. We don't all have the salary caps of the professional teams. No, that's super neat. So a final question, given that so much of your project work is in and around technology, Kevin, is how do you see AI factoring in a positive way for teams that are delivering extraordinary project outcomes? Are there particular ways that you expect to see it adopted more in those environments?
There's so many aspects to AI and it's so broad. I look at the value of AI as understanding data. So, like as we spoke of earlier, information is becoming more readily available. It's more instantaneous. We get in a lot more of it than we used to get. So with that is coming the data we produce, with the results that we of our accomplishments, the results of sometimes not our accomplishments, you know, our failures as we discuss them. But there's lots of data points. And the question is, how do we learn from that? And how do we use that to help us evolve? And AI it's one of its uses, where it can really look at these data and look for patterns, look for sequences, and then even predict what's possible and what's probable based on what you, how you've, you know, you've defined this. So, you know, it can be used in so many ways. It can be used in project management. We're in healthcare a lot, so medicine, it can learn a tremendous amount from it. You know, having patients with certain illnesses and looking at the medications they take, looking at their age, how to manipulate all that data and use it to really, again, predict programs to help people evolve. And so there's so many different attributes of it. I think everyone thinks AI is ChatGPT. I'm going to go in there. But when people realize what it's actually done when you ask it a question, it was really, it was Google just taking it one level further. You know, Google built that ability to go discover data and go and bring this data together, so when you did search for something, you could find it. Now what it's doing, it's quantifiable, taking multiple searches and giving you its interpretation of what several of those together might deem is the answer to your question. And that's evolving. That's allowing us to go to another level.
Yeah, I like that framing. And I think if in teams we can be leaning into AI, not necessarily to replace the tasks that we do, but to augment and to, you know, allow us to more quickly work through a scenario or a simulation, or to more quickly come up with a documented standard or procedure for something so that we can spend more time, you know, with our team and less time authoring. It's going to create some, you know, I would imagine some improvements in time available, and probably some more conversation around the more complex matters.
Very much so, and it will allow us to evolve as people. I know everybody's fear is we're going to become redundant. I have the exact opposite. We're just going to learn to do new things we haven't yet thought how to do yet. And we're going to be, you know, because we're going to have, based on what we're doing today, we'll have more time. That doesn't mean to say it's redundant time, but it's going to be that time can be put into other areas. And yes, when people say, well, what is that today? And when, you know, I'm going to be out of a job. No, you'll find a way. It will happen. Just start swimming and you'll learn and you'll get there. And we will become, we'll think differently. We'll behave differently. We're going to adapt. And culture has done this all along over the several hundreds of years. You know, back to the 16, 1700s. Yes, we make the same repetitive mistakes, but that's life as well. Yep. And yes, some things we learn from better than others. And this will be another one of those secular events. And yes, we will evolve. We will survive. We will come out of it. And I think we can be better for it. Kids learning to do things today, my grandchildren can use an iPhone and an Android. Better than I could, better than I can today. Forget
me
about
too.
At an age, you know, they're at an age of now 5 and 10 years old. And imagine where they're going to be in 20, 30 years. So, you know, where we never had that opportunity.
No.
You know, people can say, yeah, they're going to be antisocial because now they focus in on that. Yeah, they're going to be, it's going to be different. They're not going to be socially attuned in the same way as we are today.
Yeah.
You know, you can argue whether that's good or bad. We'll only know later on in life. But it's what we've got. It's the cards we have in front of us. We can't stop progress, and we shouldn't stop progress.
No. And there are some cool things that they're doing that actually make them more social and more connected.
It's a different form, you know. Yeah, I mean, I have this debate all the time. I have debates actually a week ago with my wife, you know, them socially interacting without seeing each other. Is it the same thing?
Yeah.
No, it's not. Is it as good as we know it today? It's probably not, because people have said people in a playground and climbing a jungle gym and working together is better and more effective than two people sitting behind a computer. But it's going to, other skills will evolve from it and we will adapt. Yeah. And, you know, I like the 60s. I was a good time. I would have liked to have gone to Woodstock, but we don't have Woodstock today. So, you know, we evolve.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I love that. And I particularly like that soundbite, like AI allows us to do new things that we've not learned to do before. So that's optimistic. It's exciting too.
Listen, it's going to be a challenge.
Yeah,
it's going to change the norms. We're going to fight it because it's change, and people generally don't want change to the extent that we have to learn how to, unfortunately or fortunate. But I do think it will evolve. I do think if I was looking to start a career right now, and I was just a kid, I'd be focusing on AI and learning how to program it and how to understand it better, because I do think it's a tool that we're going to use in the future.
Yeah, no, I love that. Well, it's been a great conversation, Kevin. We touched on a lot, from like just keeping it simple, constraint management, you know, making do with what you've got, the importance of pivoting, and as we dived into your projects framework, we looked a lot at the juggling, the reflection, the empowerment, the teamwork, some of those elements, and how they help you to turn mistakes into you know, better ways to do things. I thought that was very cool. I also really enjoyed that commentary there around, you know, you've just got to start. If you get dropped in the ocean, just start swimming and you know, learn and adapt. And I like the motion that brings for teams, particularly, you know, again, as you touched on, when teams are somewhat fixed in the moment. You know, you can't go out and draft in all your best players for the team all of the time. So this framework gives leaders an opportunity to go in there, sit on the floor, get with their teams and go through the learning and get extraordinary outcomes. So really cool content. I'm excited to dive into the book, Get the Job Done. And if any of our listeners want to find you, the book, T2 Tech Group, where do they find you, Kevin?
Oh, yeah, no, t2techgroup.com, t2group.com is the URL and the website, and my email is pretty simplistic. It's kevin.torf, my first and last name, at t2group.com. And, you know, I'm on LinkedIn, and I'm on different formats where they can find by searching my name. And, I'm pretty accessible. I like to hear from people. I like to engage, and I love hearing other people's opinions. You know, everyone's got an opinion, and I think as we said, we learn from them. You know, whether they're right or wrong is irrelevant. We learn from them.
Yeah, I love the learning. Well, thanks for your time today, Kevin, and I'll make sure to give you a call when the Wallabies finally beat the Springboks.
Well, it might not happen for a long time, so I think we should try set something on our agenda to talk before that.
Good point. I look forward to teaming up.
Well, no, thank you. I appreciate you inviting me and me being part of your show.
You bet. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,